Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
So guys, I've been reading a lot of comics lately. Not new comics, but like comics I own in my archive.
Like hentai?
Yeah, exactly.
Hentai archives.
And I think I've mentioned previously, like I've reread all through Bendis's Avengers run, right? And just loved it. I think those books really hold up. And I immediately transitioned over into Jonathan Hickman's Avengers run, you know, his Avengers and Avengers World, New Avengers, all that kind of fun stuff. Boy, that's a gear shift. Because Bendis is very personal in his storytelling, and Jonathan Hickman is all big concept, you know. It is a big, big shift. And I remember when I was reading it, when it was coming out, I was really struck by how, you know, big idea and how eclectic sort of Hickman storytelling was. Some of that really doesn't hold up. Some of that I'm looking at going, whew, whew, this is rough. This is rough stuff. And some of it is, I feel like he left a lot of stuff laying around that he never came and picked up. I really wanted to spend more time with certain of the characters that he created for the books, like Hyperion, you know, his version of Hyperion, his version of Smasher, his version of Captain Universe. I was like, man, I remember loving it when those hit. I loved it when on the reread. And I just feel like he never really developed those. And I feel like maybe he was doing something to come back later on and just never had that opportunity. I really enjoyed and his version of Starbrand. I enjoyed that too, because I was a big Starbrand guy back in the day. But anyway, I just find it really interesting, you know, going back through these things that are, you know, 10, 15 years old and rereading them.
It's hard to believe that was that long ago, because for what it's worth, those are kind of like the last great Avengers arcs, I would say.
Completely agree. Those are the last consistently great Avengers storytelling. And I mean, look at, you know, when you look at Hickman's Infinity, that fueled a lot of what we saw in the MCU, just like Bendis's Avengers and Mark Miller's Ultimates fueled a lot of what we got to see in the MCU. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a wealth of material to go back in the archives and steal from to fuel future MCU stories, but I feel like they consumed so much of modern era storytelling. I'm not sure where they had the opportunity to go.
Yeah, you know, the last... We're kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent here, which is fine. You know, because
this was just my early banter.
No, because, like, you know, I think about Avengers, right? And I've certainly given Avengers multiple shots since then. And it's even had, like, decent writers on it, like Jeb McKay. Mm-hmm. Like Jeb McKay, who, you know, we liked from, or at least I liked, you know, the work that he did from.
Am I remembering you correctly from Thunderbolts?
Well, he did Moon Knight, he did Thunderbolts, yeah. And he also, and he did the Blood Hunt. And mm-hmm. I really liked that Blood Hunt crossover, but like his Avengers stuff just didn't connect with me. You know, before that we had a Jason Aaron.
Oh, and I feel like Jason Aaron, as much as I love his work over in DC right now, really feel like Jason Aaron shit the bed
his Avengers. He did. Remember they were living in the dead celestial, and uh-huh. I kept trying with that one, and it just didn't connect with me. The Avengers of 1000 BC. So I'm looking at it, and yeah, genuinely the last arc on the Avengers that I truly appreciated and connected with was Jonathan Hickman's run, which was 2015, which was a solid 10 years ago. And that's crazy to me.
You know, what launched the modern era of Avengers storytelling was that writer's retreat probably 20-ish years ago, mm-hmm. where Bendis at that retreat said, hey, what if the Avengers were cool? And that changed everything. I mean, that was literally what he said to the room. What if the Avengers were cool?
Was that when New Avengers came out?
Correct.
Because I never really read Avengers books before New Avengers. I started jumping on then.
that's when he did the whole, you know, disassembled storyline for the Avengers, and, you know, killed off Hawkeye and I want to say Hank Pym or Scott Lang. Scott Lang.
Vision died again.
Yeah. And, you know, just really, you know, blew up the Avengers is essentially what he did. And, you know, set up kind of the non-Avengers Avengers, with the exception of Cap. You know, you had Cap, you know, Captain America, you had Luke Cage, Power Man, you know, you had Spider-Woman, Spider-Man. And, you know, people were like, you can't have Spider-Man in the Avengers. And he's like, watch me. You know, I hold Wolverine. My ear.
Yeah. Remember getting Wolverine there?
Yeah.
Wolverine was the one where I just thought you can't have Wolverine in the Avengers.
Well, and it was that whole thing of what if it was cool, you know, and instead of what you've been doing, what if it was cool? And
yeah, one of the things I loved in that era. So that was a good era of Spider-Man too, because it was that time period when Aunt May knew who he was. And those were some incredible stories. So you got to have Aunt May living in the tower, interacting with Jarvis. I loved the two of them together.
What was so wonderful about going back and doing that reread of the Bendis Avengers is that they don't explain where Spider-Man is in his storytelling, right? It's just you're getting the same Spider-Man that's happening over in the Spider-Man books at the same time. So you've got, you know, Peter Parker and Mary Jane and Aunt May all live in the tower. And then as it goes further on, you get, you know, Superior Spider-Man with Dr. Octopus as, you know, Peter Parker. And it's hilarious because the other Avengers like, does he seem different to you? And, you know, I know it because I read those books. But if you're just reading the Avengers books, not the Spider-Man books at the same time, you've got to be going, well, why is he acting so weird? Right. Because there's not even a box in the corner saying, check out current issue of Amazing Spider-Man. You know, I think it was a great way of storytelling. It's all along. Somebody at the next writer's retreat needs to say, hey, what if we made Avengers cool again? Because it hadn't been cool in a long time. In a long time. Just saying.
Well, I think they're, you know, so right now they're building up to this Avengers Apocalypse thing from Chip Zdarsky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're basically saying it's the biggest Avengers event since Disassembled. And, you know, I'm sure that's advertising. I'm going to check out the first issue of Avengers Apocalypse.
I am too.
Just to kind of see. Like, okay.
Chip Zdarsky. His Daredevil run was outstanding. Just loved his Daredevil run. And, you know, I'd like to point out, Bendis wrote Daredevil right before he wrote Avengers. And I loved Bendis's Daredevil run. So I am cautiously optimistic. I do worry when people say best thing since Disassembled, because that, you know, there's so many times people come out and say something extraordinary like that, and it just ain't true. It's just marketing.
Yeah.
I hope this is true.
I do too.
Because I love the Avengers was the, it wasn't the first. It was one of the first hero books I read when I started reading Marvel Comics. And I miss having it in my pool. I miss being able to run to the Avengers knowing that it's going to be awesome, you know, and it's been a long time since I've been a currently produced Avengers book.
Yeah. So, you know, we will see. We'll see what Avengers Apocalypse brings us.
Since you're talking Chip Zdarsky, I think I've mentioned this before. He has a really good YouTube channel. Hilarious. He makes like, he has a whole thing about one series is Chip Class, where he talks about how he makes comic books, but it is comedic, not like serious story.
Right.
And it's like he reacts to things. There was one about watch him reacting to a specific comic book story. And then there was watch him react to the teaser trailer for Superman. But it's a video of him like sitting there watching TV. You don't see the screen or anything. You just see his facial expressions. He is comedic gold on his YouTube channel.
Well, you know who also has a good YouTube channel? IOMgeek.com. Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Destination Geek. Check it out.
Yeah, get you some.
Get you some. And you know, while you're on the YouTubes checking out Destination Geek, you should also check out a couple of movie trailers. Check out our channel first. But then because this week was the Super Mario Galaxy movie. Ugh. And so, you know, big family movie, big huge release. So with it comes, of course, some big movie trailers. And so there were two movie trailers released this week. I'm going to mention mine first because I know you guys don't care about it. But the one that I was most excited about was the new Masters of the Universe trailer. I think it looks like a lot of fun. I am so excited for Masters of the Universe. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am about that movie. So I hope it doesn't disappoint me. It probably will. But I know you guys want to talk about Supergirl.
I will give you this on Masters of the Universe. I thought the trailer was... There were moments of it that were interesting to me. Part of me watched it and said, this looks like, I don't know, this looks ridiculous. Not ridiculous in a good way, but corny and cheesy, especially his time on Earth.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it looks like a lot of fun. I'm curious because I think it almost leans a bit too much into the nostalgia. Because I think some of those things won't necessarily connect with modern audiences. Or, you know, to your point, will come across a bit too cheesy. But that being said, I will be there day one because it's a freaking He-Man movie. Good. Yeah, visually it looks really stunning. So I'm hopeful. I'm really hopeful.
But the trailer I was excited for was super. I have to say, this trailer really pulled the heartstrings. And it's one of those... I can't wait for the movie, but the movie's going to be hard to watch at times.
Because of the dog elements?
Yes, because they hurt the dog.
Did you ever read, what is it? Is it Woman of Tomorrow? The arc on which this is based, Wayne?
Yeah,
and I was expecting it. I knew that happened in the arc.
Okay, I couldn't remember. I remember we talked about it when it came out, but I couldn't remember if you had picked it up.
But it's more, there's one thing reading it, but seeing it on the screen definitely hits the heartstrings more.
I think the scenes that were shared in the trailer, I think, look super sharp. I'm awfully excited about Supergirl.
Crypto crowd surfing was brilliant.
Well, you know, I've been excited about Supergirl since, you know, the end of Superman. And, you know, everything that I see of it, you know, just further encourages me that this is going to be a banger of a film. I really hope it lands. I just want James Gunn's DC to do well, particularly given the state of the DC properties and the Warner transaction with Paramount. I need him to, you know, to land this plane so that they get to keep doing what they're doing and not have everything scrapped, you know? I do understand that, you know, the powers that be are watching his performance, you know, and that's going to determine, you know, what he gets to do going forward.
Yeah. Well, in this trailer, we got to see more of Lobo. I kind of thought all along that Lobo was going to be hired as a bounty hunter to go after her.
Mm-hmm.
But the trailer doesn't seem to indicate that. It seems like they just kind of met in a bar.
Yeah.
And
wouldn't Lobo be great as her boyfriend?
That would be kind of awesome. He'd be the boyfriend that Clark doesn't approve of.
Exactly. Yeah, but I brought him home to meet the family.
Yeah, the trailer really just, it got me with that lines between them, the two of them. You know, you're that ditz from the bar. Funny, that's how I was describing you.
The line that got me was, you know, you're never going to find your people if you don't, you know, come home.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, I don't have any people. And I'm just like, fuck. I love the line that they're drawing between the two of them. You know, it's just, it further deepens the Supergirl character and making her independent of Clark. And I love it.
And one of the previous trailers had the great line of Clark sees the best in everyone. I see reality.
Right.
It's like, I love this take on the character. And it is, it is a character that is deeply traumatized,
mm-hmm.
who has basically got by because of her dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is going to be a real growth story for her.
Yeah, you know, the danger with Supergirl in the past, you know, and the flaw in Supergirl storytelling in the past, both in the comics and on film, is that largely she's just been depicted as female
Superman in a skirt.
Yeah. And, you know, this is very much drawing a line, you know, showing, no, these are different people. and from with entirely different experiences and entirely different perspective, you know, because, you know, Clark had the benefit of being an infant when he came to Earth. You know, she was, you know, what, 12, 10, 12 years old, and she saw everything. So, yeah, I'm really looking, cannot wait.
Same.
I got a question, though, guys. I am not a Harry Potter fan.
Okay. I'm
interested to know, because, Paul, I know you are, and Wayne, I suspect you are, maybe?
Nope.
No, okay.
My wife was, okay. And I remember falling asleep in the theater for the first movie.
So I'm curious.
Not my thing at all.
I'm curious, Paul, then, what you thought of the Harry Potter trailer for the new HBO Max series.
I don't know how I feel about it, if I'm being honest with you. You know, to a certain extent, it does feel a little soon to reboot the Harry Potter franchise. On the flip side, you know, the original actors don't necessarily have an interest in coming back for any more. J.K. Rowling's kind of, you know, shit the bed as far as public opinion has been concerned. So, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, we're going for a full-on reboot, and a full-on reboot from a television perspective, because I think that that's where I think my real concern is. Like, these were, don't get me wrong, not every movie is perfect, but I do very much enjoy the movies. However, it feels to me as if, you know, bringing it to a television property kind of diminishes a little bit of what the property is. Like, it, you know, those were event movies. People went to midnight showings for those movies and midnight releases for those books. And now it's like, no, it's another HBO Max TV series that'll get lost in the shuffle 3 weeks after it comes out, right? So I'm kind of curious about it. I don't know. Like, I mean, will I give? I will absolutely give it a shot. So, you know, there's that. But I also find it an interesting choice that they're moving such a big property to television.
I have to tell you, you know, I as someone who has invested in the Harry Potter property, I gotta tell you, thought the trailer looked pretty good.
Here's the thing: it looks cute. I mean, yeah. it looks like it should look. I would say for sure.
I was like, huh, I don't know. I'm probably not gonna watch it, but I thought the trailer looked good. So I was curious as to, you know, how you thought about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I will certainly give it a shot. You know, we've been talking about TV a lot lately, and, you know, so Jen and I have been, you know, we kind of go through these phases where we binge watch a show or something like that, or, you know, or we'll take a break from a show and watch movies or something like that. But now our latest show that we've been hesitant to get back into is Tulsa King. You know, so season one, we enjoyed. Season two felt like a slog. I think we're hate watching season three at this point. The problem is, like, season three has, like, the thing about Tulsa King is that it has a lot of charming actors being charming in a poorly written, poorly, you know, in a show that, like, is not good, basically. So, you know, they've got Stallone, but they've also got Garrett Hudlund. This season, they've got Robert Patrick as the main villain. They've brought in Samuel L. Jackson. And I'm like, these are all actors that I enjoy watching on screen, and I'm actually enjoying their personalities in the show. It's just the show is so bad. You know, like, it literally started as this, like, you know, mafia guy who's setting up shop in Tulsa. Then season two, he started getting into the weed business. And now season three, he's all of a sudden getting into the, he's running a distillery. And I'm like, what is this show doing?
About.
Like, dude, yeah. what is this show about? Like, what exactly, where is this going? So it's one of those things that, like, you know, I basically turn it on and Jen takes a nap for an hour. That's basically the Tulsa King experience. She takes a nap for an hour. I play with my phone and pop my head up every once in a while. But that's literally, you know, what Tulsa King is for us right now.
I tell you we watched season two, and I thought the writing and acting and production overall in season one was brilliant. I loved Tulsa King from beginning to end, season one. Season two, I was grossly disappointed in the writing. So many times that felt like they were improvising. And I keep
coming, it does.
I keep coming back to that scene with forget the guy's name now, the rapper.
Jelly Roll.
Yeah, Jelly Roll. And it literally, it doesn't feel like it is the character. It feels like Sylvester Stallone looking at this guy going, who the fuck am I even talking?
But you're right. I think that's one of the things. Tulsa King basically feels like at some point they have a storyline.
Uh-huh.
And they just figure out the dialogue along the way.
And the problem with that is that Taylor Sheridan shows, when they're good, are exquisitely written. You know, the characters are saying the things that the characters ought to be saying. And, you know, I mean, that's one of the things I loved about Stone. That was not the case in season two, which is why I've not gone back for season three, because I'm just like, I don't think I can do that. It was rough. Plus, there was an element, and this is something that Taylor does across his shows, to stretch the episode. He employs that CW muscle where you play a music video. You know, it's just random music and a bunch of cutscenes.
Yeah.
To stretch the episode. And I'm like, come on, man. You know, you've got writers, pay them. You know, I get so frustrated with, okay, well, I can go refill my iced tea because we're going to get 3 minutes of this bullshit. You know,
you ain't wrong.
Yeah. Makes me crazy, Paul. Makes me crazy. So okay.
Yeah. So I'm not enjoying that. So I'm hate watching that, but you know, uh-huh. That's the show I watch with Jen. The show I watch by myself. Well, I have two. I watch Monarch. Legacy uh-huh. of Monsters. And I'm way behind on that because I think, I don't know if it's the nature of the show or, you know, just the nature of television nowadays. It doesn't necessarily feel like appointment television.
No.
So like basically I get to it when I get to it kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, and as far as I listen to a lot of podcasts and I listen to a lot of pop culture podcasts and genre podcasts, it doesn't feel like anybody's talking about Monarch. And so I don't feel like I'm going to get spoiled, even though I spoiled you and our prep for today's episode.
Oh, that's okay.
Apologies, Paul. I don't feel like I'm getting spoiled by, you know, being a week or two late on watching it. And like I said last time, I'm frustrated with Monarch because I need more giant monster activity. Because, you know, if you're going to be a show about the Godzilla King Kongs, I like King Kong a little bit more frequently. I have to say, I'm not nearly so interested in the interpersonal relationships of chasing the monsters. And that seems to be what the show is about. Let's explore the parentage of this character. Let's explore the broken, the generational issue of broken families, you know, in among these characters. I'm just like, you know, I would be a lot more tolerant of what you're spending camera time on if there were more monsters, right? Because that's what I'm tuning in for. I could care less about whether or not this guy's father. That's what I find frustrating. And I understand. I mean, I get the we're going to tell the behind-the-scenes story who are committed to fighting monsters. I think that's a great idea for us. That's why I like season one. But they're spending far too much time on stuff I don't care about. Like, you know, you've got Monarch, which is the agency committed to fighting monsters. And then mm-hmm. you've got Apex, which is, you know, apparently Elon Musk group wanting to commercialize the fighting of monsters. And I'm just like, come on, I don't really care about this. This is not the part I care about. I care about the discovery, I care about the exploration. I care about the adventure. Do not care about, you know, the guys like, huh, you know, if we control the Titans, we could coexist with them and then also use them as them against countries that we're not happy. I don't care about
that. Yeah. I find that I think one of the issues I have with Monarch is they forgot that these characters were just meant to be fun.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Instead of exploring their family trauma.
Yeah, I know that there's been different iterations that do have social commentary on it, but that's not even what they're going for here. They're just kind of going for...
Well, let's be clear. Those efforts did it better. You know, I mean, like, when I think of Godzilla Minus One, I'm trying to remember the one before that.
Shin Godzilla?
Yes. Those two movies are fantastic. And I think mm-hmm. they balance human story versus, you know, Titan action, right? I understand the limited budget for a, you know, streaming series. And so you can't have the great big Titan on the screen. But I could we do something else other than exploring family trauma, which is what every fucking show on television is right now. And most of them do it better. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a you know, well-produced, you know, big budget, kind of boring show, which I think is kind of my issue with it.
And every time I watch it, you know, I'm just really admiring Russell on the screen. I'm like, man, I hate that we're wasting his time with him. He and his son should really be doing a big trip to China, you know, reunion show. That's what they ought to be doing. They need to do an 8-episode limited series, you know, big, more Big Trouble in China, you know.
Yeah. Want to see, or in my mind, they should just be the thing, like just do the sequel with the thing, you know, and that's what I want.
Yeah, same. I would be happy with either one of those.
But one Kurt, show that I
Dallas.
Yeah, Kurt, I got ideas. Wyatt, give me a buzz.
Yeah,
you know, one show that I am enjoying is Daredevil Born Again. You know, I had read early reviews that are like, the first two episodes are boring. It picks up in the third episode. Like, I saw multiple reviews that said that. And now, having watched all three episodes, I really don't agree.
Same.
Like, I kind of feel like all three episodes were similarly paced. Yeah, there was an act. There was maybe a bit. There was a, you know, maybe a bit more of an action sequence in the third episode. But I felt like each episode was good. You know,
I was struggling with something about Daredevil this season, and I spent like the first two episodes going, oh, I know what it is. And what's the actor's name again?
Charlie Cox.
Thank you.
I think I know what you're about to say, and I'm gonna agree, but you go first.
Well, you know, I was like, I think Charlie Cox doesn't seem nearly as cut as he used. You know, like when you look at the Netflix series, I mean, he is just, you know, both in costume and out, you can tell the guy, you know, is super fit. And, you know, there is a softness about him in the Disney show. And I was like, huh, I guess he just didn't train. He didn't go through, you know, Marvel Fitness Camp. And then in the episode I watched last night, he's
got then episode two off. Comes around. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a shirt off. And I'm like, oh, okay. I guess they just have him, you know, dressed and lit differently because holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude's cut. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless well, I also that's
some
think
kind it's... of like crazy CGI,
which is possible. Like, holy no, God. I think what it is, you know, maybe they didn't give him enough time to really get back into fighting shape for Born Again season one, and now he is for Born Again season two.
Yeah.
That's all I could think of. But yeah, I mean, that's funny because yeah, it's definitely I was like, whoa, okay, yeah. He's cut.
He looks like Charlie in all the scenes in which he's Matt Murdock, he looks like Charlie Cox from the prime movie Merv, right? Which is a rom com with him and Zoe.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, he doesn't look like. So, but yeah, I'm not sure which number of episode I watched last night. It's whatever one is out. The most recent one is recorded. But there is a tremendous in that episode, and wildly loved it. I feels like, you know, Daredevil's back, baby. Love it.
Yeah. No, I'm genuinely enjoying this season, you know. Okay. Wilson.
Let me ask you a question, though.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I talked over you, so hold that thought. Okay. The season is very, and I apologize, I'm going to take us here. It's very Trump-coded.
Yes.
You know, Wilson Fisk seems very much like Trump in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Are you getting that same perspective?
Oh, hardcore. I'm getting the
Does it impact your enjoyment?
Not at all.
Because for me, we're living this crap every day. It really does. There's a part of me that's like, I don't really want to see this in my entertainment. This is hitting too close to home, you know, because it is so, so very Trump coded. As much as the opposition, you know, is very ripped from the headlines. And I'm like, I'm not having this isn't fun. You know?
Yeah, you know, I find that, you know, part of me is like, because this show, it's not like it was produced last month, right?
Right.
You know, it's not like it was written last month, and they had us, and, you know, they had to know what they were doing before even going into season one, right? Right. Like, because season one set this up, and the political allegory of the show is so on point.
Yeah.
It's scary.
It is.
And I mean, you know, what's scarier about it is that it almost, it makes me question whether, how much of it was intentional or not. Uh-huh. And what I mean by that is, again, you know, like, based on when this show genuinely had to be put in production to be ready to be released by now,
right?
It feels like they would have had to have come up with these ideas that
they would have had to have had a magic eight ball, right?
This isn't necessarily a response to our current state, but, you know, I mean, especially Trump's task force,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is so, I mean, not to get political about it, but it's so similar to, you know, some of the controversy around ICE and all that. I'm absolutely. Like, wow, like this is so on point.
People. Yeah. The disappearing of people. I'm just like, holy shit. I mean,
especially minorities in the show, you know, and things like that. I'm like, wow. Okay. Yeah. It's crazy to me, but yeah, no, I mean, to a certain extent, I don't actually think that takes away from it for me. I actually think it maybe adds to it for me because I don't often see that in superhero television.
No, don't get me wrong. I appreciate that, you know, it is allegory. It's like, hey, you know, take a look. Take a look at what's happening right now, fiction, right? Take a look, you know, of what that looks like in the cinema universe. You think that's awful there? Well, take a look, right? It really does make you take a look at it. My problem is that it's not very entertaining. We're kind of torn today. And that's what there's a part of me I was like, God, I wish I was having a better time.
Yeah. You know? No, I get it. I get it.
Don't have a Karen Page and we don't have a Matt Murdock. I guess that's my problem. or even a Bullseye out there looking out for, you know.
Yeah. No, for me, I will say the only issue I have had with the current Daredevil run, and it's leaned into in my mind even more heavily in this second season, is Daredevil's grunting and yelling during fighting.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't feel like it has always been that way in every season of Daredevil. And I, you know, of course, in my mind, I'm like, isn't he trying to be stealthy? But he's just like grunting and yelling as he's beating the hell out of these people. I'm like, why are you so loud?
Yeah.
I just find that interesting, you know, that because that's an obvious choice. Like, I don't think, or, you know, and I don't know if it's Charlie Cox that brings that to the role or if it's the direction, but like, it is a conscious choice to make Daredevil so loud when he's fighting. And I almost find it excessive.
And conversely, they'll have him in certain scenarios where he's, you know, cat-like stealth.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, like, are you okay?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the show is very, it does put me in a desire to go back and rewatch the Netflix Daredevils. And that I may do that when this season, just kind of watch them back.
I never finished them either. I watched the first season and loved it. I started the second season, but I don't think I ever made it through it.
I will tell you, the Daredevil shows and Defenders. The Defenders is, like, I think there were three Daredevil seasons, and then the Defenders. Defenders is the weakest of the four.
Agreed.
But Daredevil genuinely, like, gets better and better mm-hmm. know, during its time on Netflix. So I highly recommend it. I think it's like you would watch 1, 2 Defenders and then 3. I think it's kind of how it works. But I would recommend checking that out for sure. And the first season of Punisher is quite well done also.
Yeah,
I never watched Punisher because I never watched the season of Daredevil he was in.
Yeah, the first season of Punisher is definitely worth it. The second season, I feel went a little off the rails. I liked it. It was just, I felt it went a little off the rails. But anyway, you know, like, you know, we were talking about Monarch. And I every time I watch Monarch in the beginning credits, you know, and it's like story by Matt Fraction, I'm like, that's crazy to me. Matt Fraction, writing TV. But, you know, because he's also writing Batman every month. from DC Comics.
And the best run of Batman in a while, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so Aaron, you're like, we have to talk about Batman this week. So what are your thoughts?
I really, really enjoyed this book. I really thought this book was really well together. I am not someone who particularly cares for Poison Ivy. I did not know that Poison Ivy was the mayor of Gotham. When did that happen?
I was wondering I was wondering that myself. I wonder if it happened in the last arc that I wasn't reading.
Yeah, so you guys hit on my one issue with this book. Like, I have loved this series and I loved the issue, but I felt lost. I felt like I had missed a ton because I had no idea Poison Ivy was mayor. I had no idea that Vandal Savage was commissioner. As like the entire setup of the issue were all things that I felt I had completely like missed and didn't. It felt like it was coming out of nowhere.
So I knew the Vandal Savage was
commissioner thing. Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, I did, you know, it's funny because I did actually read the prior arc by Chip Zdarsky and I knew Vandal Savage had become commissioner. And I guess I had just forgotten maybe that Poison Ivy was mayor because I would assume it would have happened during that arc as well. But I genuinely don't remember that.
Yeah, I knew that Vandal Savage was mayor, and I knew that, you know, I think because maybe I read an issue or two of the previous arc, and it was pretty clear at the beginning of the Matt Fraction run, right, that Vandal Savage was commissioner. I thought that was weird, but, you know, okay, I can accept that. Here's what I loved about this issue. We so frequently get villains who just, you know, my motive is I'm going to do bad things. Poison Ivy lays out why Vandal Savage is in town and why he's doing what he's doing. Poison Ivy. Alan Scott explains why Vandal Savage is doing what he's doing. And that, you know, Vandal Savage, because he's immortal and he thinks in long term, and he thinks about the guy is going to murder some guy's grandchild because the guy bumped into him one day. You know, he's got this long game. And so the fact he being goth, you know, X reason while he's there, I'm also going to fuck over Batman because Batman's the guy who, and I'm just going to use this screw Bruce Wayne. And I loved how Alan Scott lays out the whole motive for why Vandal Savage doing. And I'm like, you know, that is masterful story to not only give us the motive, but for it to make sense from the character's point of view. Now you get a better sense of who Vandal Savage. Thought it was.
I love Alan Scott. Always have. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing him and Batman eating.
Like, in a diner, coffee shop.
Batman is sitting in a diner eating. Uh-huh. And making Alan Scott pay for it. I love that. I really enjoyed the reaction. So I've always been a huge Alan Scott fan.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't know, who was the old guy and the young kid that are walking around talking? I was lost on them.
So the guy in the trench coat, if I recall correctly, he is and the kid is a witness to Vandal Savage crew doing terrible things. And it's laid out earlier in the arc that they can't find anybody who'll print the story, and so you know they're kind of staying on the move because people are aware that this kid has information that would hurt the Vandal Savage initiative, and so they feel like, you know, they'll get disappeared, which is why they freak out when the cops when they're walking through Gotham.
Okay.
Yeah. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know how I have missed all that. Like, I've enjoyed the run of the book up till now, but all I've really gotten out of it has been the Batman's interaction with the Doctor.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we had that 2-3 issues where, you know, they're being chased by ninjas.
Yeah.
This happened maybe 3-4 issues, and maybe even longer, which is why it's kind of hard. Call and they one of the things about this book do not do a particularly good job of telling what's previously happened.
I
feel like the book would have benefited from those little, you know, opening pages telling you the story so far.
Yeah, because I felt really lost in this book.
Yeah.
Well, and I think one of the things, you know, one, we had a fill-in artist on this issue. Not a bad artist, just a different artist.
Not at all.
Some of the characters look differently. But I think part of it is that this book, this arc on Batman, is deceptively complex.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, so Ryan Sook is the fill-in artist. So he's not just like a fly-by-night. Like, I mean, dude's, you know, huge comic artist. Oh, yeah. But I think it is deceptively complex in that there is a lot going on, but you know, you leave the book and you think about, like, Batman fought ninjas in this issue, but like there are other things that have happened, you know, throughout these books, you know, couple of character moments and bits like that, that they don't, to your point, they don't call back to in a way that if you're not paying attention, or, you know, that they're going to be like, this happened in Batman issue 5, you know, and so in a way that's good. In a way, you know, to your point, Wayne, you know, you could be like, who the hell are these characters? You know, or when the hell did this happen? That kind of thing. So I think that, you know, it is a well-written Batman book that commands your attention. You know, it's one of those things that, like, I would say don't read it sleepy, but in the end, you'll still get, you know, you'll still like we'll leave this book like remembering that Batman and Alan Scott had coffee together and had a conversation about Vandal Savage. But like so much other stuff happened in this book.
Yeah.
That, you know, and I'd say that's indicative of every issue of this arc is that, you know, sure, yeah, we remember, you know, this whole Tim Drake thing, but, you know, like there was also the moment where, you know, Tim Drake's boyfriend feels like Bruce Wayne maybe abuses him, you know, that kind of thing, you know? So it's a really, you know, like you said, Aaron, I feel like this is a great Batman arc and I'm looking to see where it leads.
Yeah. Well, I just love how Matt Fraction really creates these unique characters. And I loved how Alan Scott just kept referring to Batman as what a strange young man. You know, because you never think of Batman that way. You know, you're thinking, fuck, Batman scares me. You know?
Yeah.
You know, Batman's a badass. Batman is smart. Strange young man. You know, from Alan Scott's perspective. I think that's hilarious. And no one has done that.
Yeah, well, especially because most characters wouldn't see him as a young man.
Exactly.
Only somebody who's had his life artificially extended in the way Alan Scott has would.
Yeah. Anyway,
well, and before we talk about our next book, this book features a preview of Batman Wonder Woman Truth Number One.
Yeah.
Which, even though it's written by Jeff Loeb, who, you know, Jeff Loeb either writes the best comics you've ever read or the worst comics you've ever read.
And don't forget, former head of Marvel Television.
Yeah, and former head of Marvel Television. Because for every, you know, Long Halloween or Spider-Man Yellow, I think is what it, or Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow. For every one of those, we get a Batman Hush Part 2 also. Like, or, you know, or a Superman Batman, you know, with giant robots. Like, there is no middle on Jeff Loeb. But he's got an upcoming miniseries coming out. And I will tell you, the Jeff Loeb of it is not what I'm more interested in. It's Jim Chung.
Yeah,
on interiors, you know, Young Avengers, Jim Chung, you know, who has not done interior artwork in a long time, to my knowledge. Yep. So I am so psyched for some Jim Chung art.
Those pages look really good. In fact, they give you a splash page with Wonder Woman and Batman, you know, leaping across the skyline. And boy, it looks hot. It looks really hot. So I'm looking forward to it.
I cannot wait for that. Just again, specifically because of the Jim Chung art.
Yeah.
Well, looks and good. The story seems to be like it's not a current continuity story. It starts off with that it happened one night, but it's a callback to when Wonder Woman first finds out about Bruce and Selina together.
Yeah.
I want to read that story.
Yeah.
That is a fascinating conversation that like they just give us a tease of the conversation here. I can't wait to see the whole conversation. I'm all in for
that. Yeah, same here. So that'll be coming out next month.
So, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Absolute Superman, number 18, right?
Yeah, yeah. Number 18. I just checked.
Yeah. Tell me what you thought.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I go through these phases with Absolute Superman in that, like, I enjoyed the last arc. And then, you know, so this is a new story arc that that basically features the absolute version of Black Adam in this universe known as King Shazam. You know, his origin is tied to Brainiac in this iteration of, you know, in the absolute universe. And I don't know, but like I read this book, I'm like, I just don't care. And I don't know why it hit me that way, but it really hit me that way. Like, I just don't care
I have to say I'm surprised. I'd rather enjoyed this book.
Oh, really?
There's a lot going on here. First off, we get to see that Clark, or you know, our absolute Superman, is keeping the parasite around the farm in Kansas, kind of like a puppy.
I did find that funny. The parasite puppy, where he's uh-huh. like, "I like biting you." Yeah. I thought that was funny.
Uh huh. And you know, that's not going to go badly. Just saying.
Yeah, of course.
we get to see what I was very moved this issue is how changed Vandal Savage is. Keep in mind, this is Absolute Savage, not Vandal Savage that we see over as a Batman. That Absolute Vandal Savage, Ra's al Ghul, who seems,
even though like basically it's Vandal Savage.
Yeah, sorry about that. I apologize. You're right. He is changed by his not just conversation with Absolute Superman, but the example that he has set. And, you know, the fact that Absolute Superman demonstrated kindness to him, you know, someone who, you know, was out to, you know, either, you know, beat him into submission or kill him, right? That he, you know, was kind to his enemy. And so it changes Ra's al Ghul. And we get to see that in these pages, and he talks about it. And I'm just like, wow, that is really an interesting switch on the character. And it was nice that you actually got to see, so many times characters change, you don't really see the motivation. It's just the writer decided to change the character. You actually see this in the pages of this book, not of this particular issue, but in the issues previous. I thought that was great. I really enjoyed the new take on Black Adam and how he came to be, that it's, you know, not the wizard Shazam, but rather the Brainiacs, you know, give him, you know, expose him to, you know, alien foreign technology, and that's how he was created. And I got a kick that, you know, they were keeping him under wraps because of how dangerous he is. Now he's free. So I'm interested in that. And I'm also interested, we got to see you know, John Henry Irons, apparently.
Yeah, I was wondering, I'm assuming, you know, because he's like, I'm the guy who designed, you know, blah, 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 yeah. You know. So, yeah, I guess that's John Henry Irons.
Yeah. And, you know, the design's not particularly interesting, but I feel like the character. So I thought there was a lot of new stuff going on in this book. I thought this book was a good kickoff to the new storyline. I dug it. I dug it.
Yeah, oh, maybe I need to give it another shot. Maybe I just need to give it another shot. Because I feel like, for me, like I said, maybe I read it when I was sleepy, because it felt like there was a lot going on in the book.
Yeah. Well, and I will tell you, the energy level that I have when I read a book and the mood I'm in when I read a book will definitely impact my perception of that. There are times where I'll read something and just bloody hate the thing, and I have to do a little, what was I feeling as I went to it? Tired? Was I angry? Was I having a bad day? Maybe I need to come back. I read this Wednesday night and very much enjoyed the book. I enjoyed that, you know, Lois has got a mom, you know, as she's, you know, chasing down Talia. I there's a lot of interesting things happening here. I love what Jason Aaron is laying down. You know, Jason Aaron's such writer, how I could hate what he was doing over, I'll never understand it, but he's doing great stuff here.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll just give it another shot. I think that's what I need to do. I need to give it another shot, Aaron.
Okay, that's your homework. Go back and reread it. And I hope you did the homework for this week, because hey, Paul,
yes sir,
coming out next week.
Well, it's a relatively light week in comics, but Reign of the Superboys continues in the pages of Action Comics, issue 1097, as well as Supergirl, issue 12. So that continues the Reign of the Superboys storyline in the proper DC universe. We also get the latest issues of Transformers, which features the new artist on the book and a new story arc featuring the secret of Megatron revealed. And also a book that I'm kind of interested in, written and drawn by Declan Shalvey, Thundercats and Silverhawks, a crossover of two properties I loved as a kid.
Is that a Dynamite book?
It's a Dynamite book.
Okay. That's what I thought.
And I, you know, not only am I a fan of both properties, I am a big fan of Declan Shalvey's art.
Yeah, same. I love Declan Shalvey.
So I am 100% on board for this first issue.
Now, I'm going to let you canary in the coal mine this for me, because I'm not a Thundercats guy. I want you to read that book and then let me know if it's new reader friendly. Because if it is, I'll jump into it with you. But I'm going to let you let me know.
I am definitely more interested in the Silverhawks half of it than I am the Thundercats, but
I think it's a fun combination. I will say, I definitely appreciate that we've got this like crossover between these two properties that I loved both as a kid. You know, and they're different, but they're both sci-fi. I think there's a lot of potential here. So yeah, I will. I'll give it a read, and I'll let you guys know. We'll talk about it next week.
That means you need to read it Wednesday, Paul. So
I can do that. I can do that. Okay. I'm on it. Homework has been assigned. Homework and will be completed.
Because it's a light week, I think I want to follow up on something that we talked about several weeks back. I have long stated that I've never watched the G.I. Joe cartoon, didn't see the movies, and have never read a G.I. Joe. And you and Andrew recommend a jumping on point in the new comics for me. So I think I'm going to give that a go this week.
Oh, hell yeah.
I highly recommend Scarlet.
And Paul, had a recommendation as well.
I think I said start with Duke.
Yeah.
I think Duke is a good start. Scarlet was by far my favorite, though. So if you were only going to give one a shot, I would say Scarlet.
Well, I feel like you can read them independently of each other for what it's worth. Duke and Cobra Commander and Destro very much tie together. Scarlet has been very much its own thing that hasn't come back into play just yet in the G.I. Joe books. It will actually, I think in a few months. I think you can read them independently. Yeah.
Very much like you, Aaron. I never watched the cartoon, never read the old comics. Mm-hmm. I came at it completely like fresh with no preconceived notes.
Well, I'm going to commit to reading Duke, and depending on how the week goes, maybe I'll jump in too. So more to come, but we'll talk about it next time.
All right. Well, we'll have a very 80s packed next time between Thundercats, Silverhawks, G.I. Joe, Transformers. I'm excited.
Very exciting. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, if there are technical problems with the readers, know that heads up this week. Give us a shout at Ideology. Use your comments on you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness Serper.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
And hey, go over and check out the IOMgeek.com website. Paul did some cleaning up over there this week.
Yeah. We've got our IOM Geek website has been kind of rebranded. It's IOM Geek Podcast. We have a couple of different podcasts to listen to there. And, if you're interested in some of that theme park and event coverage that we do on YouTube, you can go to destination-geek.com. So we've got both. We've got an IOM Geek growing family going on right now.
Because we do not practice safe podcasting. So,
we do not. We do not.
just spreading that podcast seed, all just spurting it all over.
Oh my God.
All right, guys. Well, we'll do this all over again next time. You're going to be all right.
Bye.
Bye. Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of IdeologyOfMadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.